Hello, IHHs. Welcome back to a rather overdue episode. I don't really have an excuse, I have reasons. This month got on top of me, and I am very lucky to be an extremely busy freelancer. I know that's not true of a lot of freelancers out there. I know that a lot of people in the pandemic have lost jobs and that work is scarce, so I don't say this to complain at all. I'm very grateful for my work, but it is keeping me busy. So I'm sorry, starting off with an apology. Sorry for keeping you waiting. I have, 3 episodes, including this one that I'm recording right now, stacked up and ready to be recorded and edited and get out to you. And hopefully that means that I will be back on top of things soon. With my sorry out of the way, I want to follow that up with a thank you. And that is, as always, to the Patreon crowd. I have 2 new shoutouts to shiny new patrons. And that is Christy Stuckey and Sheena O'Keefe. They have both recently joined the Patreon Club, and I am so, so thankful for your support and contribution that helps me do this thing that I love. And I do really love it, even when, like this instance, I'm running late and it feels like a pressure thing. So thank you, Christy and Sheena, for that support. I really appreciate it. There's not going to be a lot of preamble to today's episode, because I think, to a degree, the kidnapping of baby Zephany, which is the topic of episode 15, is quite a well-known story, especially in South Africa. And it is a bit of a treat for me as a true crime podcaster, and for Sam Render, who is my long-suffering researcher, because today I get to tell a story that hasn't ended in death and gore. I know that's a bit of a low bar for what constitutes a treat, but it is. The story of the kidnapping of Zephany Nurse is one of crime and kismet, a kidnapping and a chance meeting that changes everything. Most of the podcasters and YouTubers who tell the story start at the very beginning, which, as Julie Andrews likes to tell us, is a very good place to start. For me, though, I wanted to start this tale at someone specific's beginning, at the moment of truth, so to speak. So let's zoom in to Swansveig High School in the Dreyersdal to Kai area of Cape Town. It's 2015, and Miche Solomon has just started a new year at her school. Miche lived in Seawinds, Lavender Hill, and later Hillview, with her folks Lavona and Michael Solomon. They were a small and tight-knit family, just the folks and Miche and her older cousin Gerald, who her parents had raised as their own. He was 10 years older than her, so even though Miche thinks of Gerald as her brother, she says she also felt like an only child and was often treated like one. She had a close bond with her father. She describes going on adventures with him when she was growing up, going to the beach together and going fishing. He was the person that she went out into the world with. Her mom was more of a homebody, often in the kitchen, but they used to go to the movies together often. It was their little tradition and special time. The Solomons were not a wealthy family. Michael worked as an apprentice electrician and Lavona as a seamstress. But Miche didn't want for much, and she had the kind of self-assurance of a kid who grew up absolutely certain of the love of her family. Miche is in her final year of high school when we come into the story, and of course with every new year, there is an intake of new students, and this year has brought Cassidy Nurse to the school. She's a Standard 6 or Grade 8 pupil who bears a striking resemblance to Miche. In fact, Miche had heard about Cassidy several times before she met her, because all of her friends are remarking on the similarities. When they did meet just a few days later, Miche says there was an instant connection between them. Despite the 4-year age gap, at an age when 4 years is quite a leap developmentally, the two felt a most unusual bond. They clicked. They just got each other. In various interviews, Miche describes how she felt she knew Cassidy immediately, and how she quickly slipped into a nurturing role with her, fixing her hair and helping her with her makeup. She says in her book, quote, "When anyone asked if we were sisters, we would joke, 'We don't know, maybe in another life.'" Of course, both girls told their families about the coincidence, including sharing a selfie that they had snapped of themselves. Miche remembers her mom, Lavona, commenting on how similar they looked, and her father, Michael, said he knew the family. He had even shopped at Cassidy's family's electrical store. At Cassidy's house in Capricorn, Muesenberg, just 5 km away from the Solomons, the photo was not a sweet little talking point over dinner. Cassidy's parents, Celeste and Mornay Nurse, pored over the pic and wanted to know much more about the girl in it. They asked Cassidy to ask her birthday, where she had been born, who her parents were, all of it. One afternoon, Miche and Cassidy were having lunch together after school when Cassidy's dad, Mornay, arrived to fetch her. He had seen a few pics of Miche at that point, like I said, but when they got face to face, he was struck not just by the resemblance between the two girls, but by how much Miche looked like his wife, Celeste. She even had the same mannerisms. It wasn't just uncanny, it was eerie. He tried to play it cool, but he needed to know more. He plied her with the same questions over again, asking Miche about her parents and her birthday. Perhaps alarm bells should have been ringing for Miche. After all, Cassidy had told her something shocking recently, that she had an older sister she'd never met, that this sister had been kidnapped as a 2-day-old baby, right out of her hospital crib while her mother slept. But that's easy to say as a person external to the action, you and me, viewing through the clarity of hindsight. Imagine if I told you that your perfectly normal and perfectly happy life was built on an improbable lie, despite there being no other warning signs, no suspicions to that point. For us, my IHH lovelies, we can all see where this is going, but Miche couldn't. So when she was called out of her math class to the principal's office one day and asked if she would be willing to take a DNA test, she was utterly flabbergasted. Two social workers were waiting for her in that office, and they told Miche a story, one that captured the country 17 years ago. That is the story of the kidnapping of baby Zephany, as she had been called in the press. Zephany had been born on 28 April 1997 in Groote Schuur Hospital in Cape Town. She'd been born via C-section, so her mom was still recuperating in the ward a few days later. And it was while Celeste lay there, in and out of an exhausted post-operative sleep, with her little girl resting by her side, that the unthinkable happened. On April 30th, someone entered that room, dressed in the maroon trousers and oatmeal shirt of the Groote Schuur nurse's uniform, and took Zephany from her crib before disappearing, seemingly forever. It was a huge news story at the time. Who had taken baby Zephany and why? And most importantly, where was she now? Miche listened politely to the social workers, but she explained she couldn't be the little girl that they were looking for. She had been born to Lavona Solomon at Retreat Hospital on the 30th of April, 1997. It was on her birth certificate, and she'd been told the story so many times before of, you know, how easy her childbirth had been, how Lavona had been in such great shape that she'd been discharged with her baby the same day. Then came the first bombshell. The details Miche knew about her birth simply weren't true. They had already checked with Retreat Hospital, and there was no record of her birth or of her mother's labour. With that still echoing in her ears, Miche agreed to a DNA test. That would prove it once and for all, she thought, and then she could go home and ask her parents to clear this all up. But then the second bombshell. She wouldn't be going home that day. A case had been opened with the police, and she'd have to stay in a safe house. The results came back the next day, and they were clear. Miche Solomon was Zephany Nurse. She was the daughter of Celeste and Mornay, and Cassidy was in fact her sister from another life, but it was a life she never got to live, a life that was still unfolding. Lavona Solomon was arrested, something that Miche talks about with such emotion. I think this is really why I chose to start the story in the middle. This moment of Miche saying of her mom's arrest, quote, "That broke me. I needed her. I needed to ask her why, what's going on. I was so overwhelmed that I belonged to someone else." I was struck by this description. It contains devastation, but in such simple words. Piecing together the various bits of it from interviews and court testimony, this is the narrative as I now understand it. Let's start with Celeste dozing in that ward. She says she remembers the figure in the uniform, but nothing else about her. She remembers the figure picking up the baby and bouncing her lightly, as Celeste slipped back into sleep. And then she was woken by another nurse, who was asking her pointedly, where was the baby? They quickly raised the alarm and the ward and then the entire hospital was searched, and of course the police were brought in. This is when they learned from another mother on the ward that there may have been an attempted abduction the day before Zephanie was stolen. The mother in this case was Shireen Pete, and she tells of coming back into her room and finding a nurse holding her child in a way that just didn't feel right. But because of her return, because she was awake, that baby was left behind. Zephanie's little zip-up outfit was found. It was one of those half-baby grow, half-sleeping bag things, as well as an abandoned handbag with no personal items in it that they assumed had been used to take Zephanie out of the hospital. And most chillingly, they found a squished-up pillow in a tunnel leading from the maternity unit to the outside road. Even then, without the benefit of our hindsight, the investigators made the obvious leap. Someone had wandered into the ward wearing the pillow like a pregnancy bump, and had wandered back out again with a baby, and no one had been any wiser to it. 2 days more passed in a blur, but then Celeste was discharged and sent home without the child she'd come in to deliver. She and Monet arrived empty-handed to their home, where the newly decorated nursery awaited the firstborn child who wouldn't be sleeping in it, filled with the crib and the baby powder and wipes and whatnot that wouldn't be used. It reminds me of that famous flash fiction example, the saddest six-word story. For sale, baby shoes, never worn. There is an interview with Celeste in The Weekend August from around 2010. That's 13 years after Zephanie's birth and disappearance, and 5 years before we would learn her fate. In it, Celeste talks about hearing the cats in the area calling and thinking it sounded just like a baby crying. The same August piece talks about people calling in some promising leads early on, but none of them panned out. And of course, a story like this, with the national attention that it's getting, brings out the crazies, including at least one attempt at extortion. That story ends on a note that is disconcertingly prophetic. It reads, quote, "The other nurse children, all born at Grotesquier, bear a strong family resemblance. Monet believes Zephanie might look like them. I'll never, ever give up hope," says Monet. "I can feel it in my gut. My daughter is out there, and she is going to come home." End quote. Only a skip and a jump away from the nurse's home lived Lavona and Michael. They had been in a relationship for years, but hadn't been able to have a child. In fact, because of Lavona's history of miscarriages, they hadn't really expected her to bring a child to term. Then, in late 1996, she announced she was pregnant, and this one seemed to stick. In discussion with the author of Michet's book, Michael talks about Lavona's pregnancy, saying she really looked pregnant. Not just the belly, of course, but with the swelling and the softening of features that can happen to some expectant mothers. They weren't living together at the time of Michet's birth, but they lived so close together that they could see each other's houses from their own. So that Thursday in 1997, he came home from work, and he could see a bunch of people outside Lavona's, sitting around. As he approached, they started to call out to him, to congratulate him. Inside was Lavona and the baby. She'd arrived, she was in perfect health, and they named her Michet, after her father. Michael and Lavona married when Michet was 2 years old, and they went on to raise that little girl in love and care, while just down the road, the nurses bought her a birthday cake, year after year, to mark the birthday of the little girl who never came home from the hospital. Now fast forward back to 2015. Lavona and Michael are questioned, and Lavona is arrested on suspicion of kidnapping. They take a DNA sample from both Mache and Lavona, and Mache is moved to that safe house that I mentioned, but quickly to the house of a social worker who took pity on her when she insisted that she couldn't stay at the safe house because that was for broken children. And after almost 18 years, Celeste and Mornay are reunited with their child, the girl they had called Zephanie. However, it was not the reunion that they had perhaps imagined. They met in Belleville Police Station, and Mache talks about finding the strength to hug these crying strangers, her parents. Of course, they must feel immense relief, but Mache is almost an adult and has spent her whole life as part of a happy family. In her book, she talks about feeling deeply for the nurses, but not the same frisson, I guess, of recognition that she had for his sister. Rather, she talks about them deserving the time with her, writing how she kept repeating in her mind, just go with it. She says she felt guilt for what her mother did and deep empathy for the nurses, but what she didn't feel was that connection. I've been thinking about this for a few weeks, and of course, you want to reunite the family with their lost child as soon as humanly possible. But for all the other bits of fortunate luck that play out in this case, Mache's age is not one of them. If she had been younger, say a child or a preteen, there would still be a lot of formative years ahead for them to bond in a traditional way. And if she had been older, perhaps she would have come to them with curiosity about her real family. But there would be less expectation of a typical child-parent bond. 16, 17, 18, it's a tough age, almost adult, but not quite. I'm still not sure what my point is about this aspect, but I do think there's something in that, something just extra difficult about reintroduction at that age. Anyway, Lavona is indicted on charges of kidnapping, fraud, and contravening the Children's Act, but released on bail, although she is barred from seeing Mache. Michael is not charged. The police are satisfied that he was in the dark about the whole thing. They bring in Shireen Pete, that other mother from the maternity ward back in 1997, to identify Lavona from a lineup. But of course, the most damning evidence is naturally Mache / Zephanie herself. She is the subject and the object of the crime, a victim, but not really a witness because she was just days old after all. After the initial court appearances for pleading, etc., the trial of Lavona Solomon begins in the Cape Town High Court in February 2016. She pleads not guilty to kidnapping, but she does finally admit that she always knew the baby wasn't hers. In fact, she tells the court that she was desperate to have a child and had been receiving help to conceive from someone that she identifies only as Sylvia. This help seems to be of an alternative medical nature, rather than typical IVF or similar. Then one day, she says, Sylvia came to her with a baby and told her this child had been born to a teen mom who wasn't able to raise her. No evidence to support this version of events was ever submitted, as far as I can see, and the trial judge dismisses it as pure fantasy. In just a few weeks, the trial concludes, and Lavona is found guilty. In fact, the sentencing takes longer than the case itself, and Mache testifies during sentencing, essentially in mitigation of Lavona. This is the first time she had seen the woman she thinks of as her mother since over a year before, on D-Day, as she's come to think of it, the day she learned the truth. Clinical psychologist Mark Stain also testified in mitigation of sentencing, detailing Lavona's health problems, the abuse she had suffered as a child, and the abusive relationships she'd lived through. Still, Lavona is sentenced to 14 years, with 4 suspended. Today, as I record this in 2021, she is roughly halfway through her time in jail. I tried to find out a bit more about Lavona, but information is thin on the ground. She's still a bit of a mystery to me, and partly that is her own doing, as she's never really chosen to tell her story. I learned from Miche's book, which is of course linked in the show notes, that Lavona was one of six children who were essentially abandoned by their mother when Lavona was just a preteen, leaving them to beg for food, although that mother still crops up from time to time. Lavona then had a child at 16 years old, a little girl that she called Yolanda, but Yolanda died when she was just 6 weeks old. It's unclear how she died or why, but Miche writes that her mom was at work and came home to the news that the child was dead, and she held her in her arms until the ambulance arrived to take the little body away. Then there was another pregnancy and a miscarriage, and another serious boyfriend who Lavona left when she learned he was emotionally abusive to Gerald. Remember, that's the cousin Miche thinks of as her brother. Lavona was also married before Michael, and that husband had abused her. Miche writes that this previous husband had raped Lavona and shocked her with electrical cords, although she, Miche, doesn't know the full extent of what Lavona endured. He was apparently in prison for robbery when Lavona eventually filed for divorce, when she learned that this thugband had been planning to have her killed, even from behind bars. Then came Michael, who was a friend for a few good years before they started a romantic relationship. Michael is, by all accounts, a good man, an introvert, a loyal husband. He did abuse alcohol at some point, but quit drinking completely when Miche was a tween. And he was clearly devoted to Miche, as well as to Lavona, even now after all the revelations. Miche has accepted that the woman she thought of as her mom clearly faked at least most of her pregnancy, and that she snuck into the maternity ward in 1997 with the intention of taking a baby. Lavona has not yet owned the truth, and she may in fact have come to believe her own story. Kidnapping a newborn is thankfully a very rare crime and is typically perpetrated by very unwell women, some of whom have suffered repeated losses, abuse and abandonment. Sam, who helped me research this case, found a resource about the profile of such criminals, and Lavona ticks many of the boxes, including experiencing miscarriages or the inability to have children, planning the abduction but not necessarily a specific target, impersonating nurses to gain access, and living in the community where the abduction takes place. I don't say any of this to excuse what Lavona did, but I do feel sympathy for her, and I have wondered a few times this week if jail is in fact the right place for such a person, or if perhaps some sort of secure psychiatric facility would be more fitting. I don't know that I've settled on my answer here, and I know that the nurses will feel differently, angry and hurt and resentful for the life and relationship that they could have had with their child, and that is entirely valid. Crimes have, or should have, consequences. But it also raises the question of what is the function of a prison system? Because it's clearly not a deterrent. If it was, then we wouldn't have any crime in this country. It is a punishment, sure. Is it to keep people away from us who may be a danger to society? In which case, Lavona doesn't really fit that. I don't know, I still have to think it through, but knowing her history as a woman who has experienced repeated abuse and loss, I just struggle to think of her, to think that the prison that she sits in today as the right place for someone like that. Especially because Lavona maintains her fantasy of what went down in 1997. In 2019, Miche went to court to have her adopted identity unsealed, and thereafter her book came out. She goes by the name Miche, which is why I've chosen to use that throughout. At the beginning of this episode, I said, this is a story of a crime. Even if we view Lavona as a deeply troubled and sympathetic person, she committed an horrific crime, snatching a newborn from her mother and perpetrating the deception, lying to everyone in her life for almost 2 decades. But because of Miche's own strength and her decision to let us into the story, it is also a story of family relations, one that opens a window on the complexity of both love and loss. Because of Mache's openness, she has essentially two sets of families. Those relationships are not necessarily easy or clear on either side, and I'm sure that there are plenty of hurts to work through still. But I am a little in awe of the character and empathy she displays. She still lives with Michael Solomon, and today she has two young children. She visits Lavona in jail from time to time and is working on developing a relationship with her biological parents as well as her siblings. She dedicated her book to both mothers. Thanks for listening. All of my sources, including a link to Mache's book, are in the show notes. I'll be back soon with another true crime story. IHH is a Ready Freddy production.